Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. We are very happy that you are able to attend. And there is BL. Yes, BL. Hello. we're going to start with our second set of axes, which is the Taurus and Scorpio. For those of you that are new to our broadcast or to our webinar, we will be doing every month, well, almost every month, the axes. And we're now on the second one. We've already done Aries and Libra. So we're ready to go. So I need to have the thing on the screen, and I'm going to turn off my webcam so we can see everything a little bit better. It's on again. BL, I don't show anything.
Can anybody see my screen? I can't see my screen now.
No, it's not on.
It is.
That's what I'm saying. I don't show anything. Oh, there it is.
Sorry, I turned it off when I turned off the whatchamapuppy. I'm sorry.
Okay. There we go. This is much, much better. Thank you. Okay, so we're starting off with the second sign, which is Taurus. And if we start looking at the chart, the first house we know is an Aries house. So the second house is the Taurus house. And we are taking for granted that some of you have already partaken and listened to the webinars that were offered last year, maybe the year before, on the information about each sign, so that we're taking for granted that you have some knowledge behind you. Taurus is an earth sign, and it's on the fixed cross, so the mode is a fixed cross, and the energy that it conveys is the fourth ray. We'll get into that a little bit more as we move through the Taurian energies. And we have on the screen here the dates that usually we refer to the Taurian time, which is April 21st to May 20th. So being that it's the second sign of the zodiac and it is associated with May, in the Northern Hemisphere, that speaks to spring. So things are starting to spring up from the earth, being that it's an earth sign, it's very apropos. Individuals who are born under the sign are down to earth. And anybody that is an earth sign will understand what we mean when we say down to earth. It's practicality, it's realism, it's almost as if the feet are planted on the earth, as opposed to an air sign that would have the mind in the air, in the clouds. So some of the other qualities associated with this sign are calm and patience, loyalty, affection, and sensuousness. And we will get into that a little bit more because that has a lot to do with our desire nature. An undeveloped Taurus could be lazy, inflexible, and that proverbial stubborn as a bull that comes in here, envious, greedy, or materialistic. That doesn't mean that all Taurians are stubborn. It's just it's a label that it has been given to Taurus. Because I guess the Taurian bull can be stubborn, and it's for what we call undeveloped energies of Taurus. On your left there in that little rectangle, it talks about the various areas that it rules. It rules the neck, the throat, the thyroid, the gland, the whole area surrounding the throat area. So you've got the vocal cords, the jugular vein, the tonsils, that whole mouth and throat area. Hence, there's a creativity associated with the throat center. The throat center is where words are spoken, and that is the creative energy that is often associated with Taurus. So the rulers are Venus and Vulcan, respectively. Okay. One of the things that is worth mentioning, because it is an earth sign, it is associated with materiality and the things of the material world. Now, some of its strengths. So it's patient and reliable, warm-hearted and affectionate, and sensual, very sensual. It can feel, it can sense, it's very good with the touch. And that's why we see many Taureans working and fashioning things of the earth, whether they fashion mold clay or wood, or work with the earth in agriculture and make beautiful gardens. There's a real sensuality that they display. They can be persistent and determined and return life to its simplicity. Some of the weaknesses is they like the material of things and they want to accumulate it. So therefore they can be very possessive of themselves, of their the people they love, of the things themselves. And that can lead to greed and an attachment to the comforts and the pleasures of life. They can be stubborn, as we've said before, and inflexible. I often think of Taureans when they are so stubborn or inflexible. It's as if their feet are in the ground in that mud. And you know how sometimes it's very hard to pull your foot out of the mud? That's the kind of fixity that I see associated sometimes with the weakness or the negativity of Taurus. Esoterically, Taurus is here to manifest beauty, to be a wise steward of the earth's resources, to ground them, to anchor them, to manifest. And the key word here is to illuminate. It is the only sign in the zodiac that has the word illumination associated with it. It is the bull's eye, the eye of the bull, which, you know, in previous ages ago, we would talk about it as the third eye, of the eye that is oftentimes associated with the Ajna center, but which is sort of in the middle of the forehead, but it is the eye of illumination. And the idea of a bullseye is perfect as a symbol to indicate how focused and how convergent those energies would be then in that part of the anatomy. Okay. So here are some depictions of how we would see Taurus. The eye there, again, it's the eye of illumination and is the beauty, and how the Taurean can create beauty, whether it's in fashion, whether it's in makeup and decor. There is a real knack to that fourth ray, which is the arts and which is beauty. And then we see how they're able to grow things and to work with the earth. The upper right-hand corner shows how lazy a Taurean can be. And let's just read some of what it says here. The house which Taurus rules is where you will be challenged to create and to manifest beauty and be a wise steward of the resources. It's where you need to simplify what you're learning and to anchor and value that which you are learning. The word value is a good word usually associated with Taurus, and we'll see why, because it has to do with Venus, which is probably the next slide. Yes, Venus is the exoteric ruler. It's the traditional ruler, and Venus's personality is considered ray 2. Its soul ray is considered ray 5. And we know that Ray 2 deals with love and wisdom. Ray 5 deals with the mind, with the intelligence. So we combine the two words and we get intelligent love. Another word for Venus is Aphrodite. She was the goddess of love, was considered to be the most beautiful woman or goddess around at the time. It is a sacred planet. It is said to be the Earth's alter ego. Venus has progressed a lot further than the earth has, and therefore it's either the alter ego or the little sister or however the various books refer to it, but it is there to help us and to shine its light on us, our planet Earth. So some of the things about Venus have to do with love, with magnetism, with appreciation, and we tend to appreciate that which we love. Hence, it leads to loving intelligence, the love of beauty and the love of seeing the beauty in all things. And hence, it has this ability to refine and to make everything attractive and beautiful. Now, if you combine intelligence and love, intelligent love leads to wisdom. So esoterically, the word wisdom is often associated with Venus. So what we said, it is what we value, what we appreciate, and hence it leads to discernment. Discernment is a little bit different than discrimination. It has more of a sensual response to it when you discern something as opposed to discriminate, which is very analytical. It's related to the mental and aesthetic faculties. It is love, wisdom, the union of heart and mind. What a perfect combination here to talk about Venus. Venus is love. It's the heart. It's intelligence. It's the mind. So it's the union of heart, mind. Mind filled with light, ray 5, directs the love principle through the power of the mind. And so you have the two rays that are associated with Venus. In undeveloped man, Venus is instinctual mind or affection, which is brotherly love in embryo. So how do we see Venus in the elements? For all of you who can read the chart, who know where your Venus is in the chart, you all know what Venus looks like. It's the symbol for the feminine, with the cross at the bottom and the circle above it. So if your Venus is in a fire sign, you're going to see grand gestures, a lot of energy and enthusiasm. And, so, and the example we have here is someone buying a gift of 5 roses as a huge gesture, a grand gesture. If it's in the earth, and that's where Taurus is about, it's about the earth, it's about tangible commitments. Venus in Taurus is the Earth Venus. It's physical, it's sensual, it's emotional, and its feelings are very strong and accentuated. Venus in the air, in the mind, and remember, Venus is also about the mind, the intelligence. It requires words to share one's sensitivity and vulnerability. Venus, which is mind, in water. How do you put mind into water? It requires an interchange of sensitivity and love feelings. This would be very much our feeling nature, our astral nature. So one's sensitivity would be heightened and vulnerability. So that is a good thing to note in your own chart if you have that capacity, is where is your Venus? Okay. Now, the esoteric ruler is Vulcan, and generally Vulcan is, if your chart has been put through for you by a non-esoteric astrologer or the ones that you can get online, generally it will not show you Vulcan. Vulcan is a planet that most of exoteric or traditional astrologers are not familiar with, but scientists, astronomers can sense its electromagnetic field. It does give that off that radiation. So they know that something is there, but they can't necessarily see it. It is very, very close to the sun. And it's considered to be in between Mercury and the sun. So Mercury and the sun, they say, is one. Mercury and the sun are one. You can imagine what Vulcan and the sun would be. So it is extremely powerful being so close to the sun, and yet we don't see it, but we definitely can feel its energies. it gives off ray one, and ray one, the color associated with ray one is red. And I remember Michael years ago would say to us that when the sun sets in the west and it gives off that really, really strong red color, it's because those rays are reflective and bouncing off Vulcan, because it's so close to the sun and we can kind of sense its colors then. Vulcan in mythology was known as Hephaestus, who was the blacksmith of the gods. And he would create all these beautiful metal works for the various gods, whether they would be shields or whether it would be spears, and he would engrave them and make them really beautiful for the gods. So we said that it's hidden by the sun. Its symbol or glyph is a downward pointed arrow, not an upward, but down into the earth, down into which indicates pressure, like constant pressure, the hammering away, like imagine the hammer constantly hitting you on the head, right? Imagine what that would feel like, constant pressure, headachy, being in a vice. So its purpose is to strengthen the individual spiritual will, much like the forger of steel does with a hammer. It forges the steel. It puts it into the fire, right? And then into water to cool it off, and then bangs away at it. So it can create a tremendous amount of emotions and steam that comes out. So one can experience a lot of emotions associated with that. So it strengthens the spiritual will and represents the grip of the soul. When that Vulcan energy grips you, there's no movement away. It really wants you to change. It kind of reshapes, it chisels away, it prunes the personality so that the spiritual will can start to be noticed and emitted. It is a sacred planet. Grounded power. Vulcan tends to destroy our attachment to matter and form, and it creates the vehicle for the expression of the soul. What is that vehicle? It's the personality. So it is very much involved with the spiritualization of matter. Personality is considered matter. So it wants to create the matter, the form, so that the spirit, the life, the will can shine through. I think we're ready to move on. To the soul, Vulcan rules the inner man and guides his fashioning and forging of the personality. It presents opportunity to transform desire into spiritual will. Do we know that desire is a lower manifestation of will? Will is a higher manifestation of desire. It is a builder as well as a shatterer, because if it has you in a vice and it shatters the old so that the new can be built into the personality. Under the gripping of the soul is under pressure, like a pressure cooker. It can jolt and it can allow for an explosion of energy. Again, it's about restructuring the personality, the matter. So it reorients itself to the higher vibration. So it creates an environment within the personality that it's now more attuned to the higher vibration, because it brings to your consciousness that which needs to be done away with, that which needs to be changed, that which needs to be repulsed. It is the force which initiates or begins, but also destroys, bringing death to form in order so that the soul may be set free. And one of the qualities of the first ray is freedom and liberation. So it wants to free up the individual and make them more receptive to the energies of the soul by doing away with our attachments, and that which holds us back. Now, the glorification or purification and the detachment of matter is what it represents. Now, it's only 8 degrees away from the sun. So everybody has Vulcan in their chart. 8 degrees, up to 8 degrees away from the sun. It can be on either side of the sun. It could be, if you're looking at your chart, to the left of the sun, it could be to the right of the sun. Now, if you have, let's say your sun at 27 degrees or 28 degrees of Taurus, it could be in the next sign, you see. It could be in Pisces, or it could still be in Taurus, depending on which side it is, and we do not know that. It's because it's not visible, we have not been able to ascertain that, but we do know that it's within 8 degrees of the sun. Vulcan is very much involved in the first initiation. What is the first initiation about? It's about recognizing that you're more than your body, recognizing that you are a spiritual being. And again, it's by helping us detach from all those things that hold us back. And in the first initiation, it's the it's the birth of the Christ energy within the heart. And the heart is usually associated with Leo. So it's associated with the beating of the heart in Leo. And remember that the way the hammer would work on metal would be constant, creating a beat back and forth. It's this kind of thing, the hammer hitting the metal. So it's the beating of the heart. So this beat fashions the metal and allows for the deconstruction, if that's the right word here, so that the new can be built in. And it's said that first initiation is the hardest, since it's difficult to move matter, and our personalities are matter. This is already said, it's the birth of the Christ in the cave of the heart, and Leo rules the heart chakra. So you can see that it's association here with Leo. And Leo is fire. And this blacksmith, Vulcan, works with fire. Okay, I'm going to move along. Vulcan. Where it is for you in your chart. If it's in fire, if it's in a fire sign, it's the skill to forge or temper our actions and behaviors, which lead to trials, to testing, to reorientation of our spiritual will. In earth, it is the skill to forge or temper our accomplishments through our desires and the ability to bring them into material expression. One of the things about Taurus, and because this is Vulcan in Earth and it is the ruler of Taurus, is Taurus is very much about our desire nature and the sensuality that desire brings about. So it's the ability to temper that desire, whether it's for food, for drink, for clothing. Oh my gosh, this won't stop here. All of that is part of the desire nature. In air, it is about our relationships and resulting in duality being recognized as it needs to balance that energy within ourselves. And in water, the skill to forge or temper our feelings and responsiveness, resulting in purification and identification of our spiritual will. It is not an easy if it's in water, because it brings up those emotions, brings up those feelings, those responsiveness to various situations, which can be rather difficult. So when Vulcan orbits and hits your various planets, this is where we would feel it the most, because it is stimulating the very, very thing that we need to work on. Okay. So the focus as Venus moves to Vulcan, and you'll see here, try to show you a glyph for Vulcan because it's not usually found in most books. It's a downward pointing arrow. The aspects between Venus and Vulcan in your chart relate to the purification through fire, because that's how the blacksmith works. If they are conjunct, you know what conjunct is, co-joined, acting as one, you could be very intense, transformative, and willful. If you have harmonious aspects like sextile, trine, a quintile, you could indicate that you're working on strengthening the spiritual will. And if you have inharmonious aspects like crosses or a quincunx, it indicates that you are under pressure to change. So the harmonious aspects, it means that you are working on this. The inharmonious accent means that you have an opportunity to work and to change, to transform, because this is a very transformative energy. Mm-hmm. There
you go. Okay.
You're on.
Thank you. Thank you, Eva. All right. Now I get to talk to you guys about Scorpio. And I know so much about Scorpio. I have Saturn in Scorpio. It's my one lonely little planet in Scorpio, which is an opportunity. And I've had that my entire 65 years because my older brother was a Scorpio. And then I married a man with the same birth date. So I've lived Scorpio forever. It's not an easy sign to live with when you're a little sunny Leo, let me tell you. Anyway, that's my personal story about Scorpio. So let's look at what it really does. You can see the glyph for Scorpio right here. It's got that upward pointing arrow that we can't quite see right here. It is the scorpion. It does rule the eighth house. It is like Taurus, Ray 4, and it's fixed water. It's a water sign. It's the eighth sign of the zodiac, and it's associated with the fullness of autumn, death, rebirth, inheritance, other people's resources, and sex. Those are the key words exoterically. Esoterically, it's about transformation. It's about the tests of discipleship. It's about regeneration, a death of one thing so it can be reborn again as something else, the death of the personality so that the soul life can come through, some kind of transformation happening. If the goals are materialistic, then they're looking for personal power, and it can result in individuals who ruthlessly violate the right of others for personal gain. Do we know anybody like that? The lower nature needs to be transformed. Those old negative patterns need to die so that the soul powers can begin to manifest. Those are the tests that the disciple faces in Scorpio. So the scorpion is the symbol, but the higher symbol is the eagle and then the phoenix rising from the ashes. Scorpio rules the generative organs, the bladder, the prostate, the urinary tracts. It is a water element, very fluid, very emotional. Traditional rulers are Mars and Pluto. The soul ruler is Mars. And we'll see more about that in a minute. The strengths. It's powerful, passionate, magnetic, creative, resourceful, insightful, transformative power, penetrating. I mean, my husband looked at our kids all of his life and said, I know what you're thinking. It can be private, secretive. They're good executives. They're very determined. Of course, it's a fixed sign, right? Can be scientific, investigative. They're good detectives. They can be probing, and they can be very passionate. Guess I have that twice. Weaknesses. They can be jealous and resentful. I don't get mad, I get even kind of stuff. They can be compulsive, obsessive, very secretive. They can be manipulative, sneaky, destructive, vengeful, temperamental, overbearing, violent, sarcastic, suspicious, and intolerant. For the esoteric Scorpio, what the disciple is going through, it's the test, the trial, and the triumph. Always the triumph. It may take forever to get there, but it's always the triumph. You know, if you look at the tests of Scorpio, it tells us so much about the tests that a disciple goes through. And it's kind of like whack-a-mole. You take care of one test, you whack that head off, and another one pops back up until you learn to handle all of them together and to raise them up to the air, to the higher mind, and can actually kill the real problem. So the task here of Scorpio is to transmute that lower desire into the higher will. And you do that through this constant testing and purging of the personality so that we can become victorious over our lower nature. It's related to psychology. It's very powerful, the Scorpio. It's the metamorphosis. Something is going to change. Something has to die out so that the new can come in. They love secrets. War is not healthy for children or other living things. Of course it's not. But the Scorpio faces war. He faces the battle. And then the house that Scorpio rules is where you're going to be challenged radically to change or transform your life. Something has to end in order for that something higher to be able to emerge. The exoteric ruler, the old ruler, was Mars. It is also the esoteric ruler. It's race 6. And it's the rebellious personality. Mars is the god of war. It's the drive for sexual power, for control, for manipulation of energy on the emotional plane. Represents desires, passion, warfare. It embodies that sixth ray force. And this results in destructive, fanatical types. On the positive side, that sixth ray can offer strength, intensity, determination, and courage to be that warrior for one's self-created demons. Or I would also say, to be that warrior for someone else, to fight the right battle. Esoteric, it brings energy to a focal point. It's that courage to step into the darkness, usually that we've created ourselves, into those murky waters, and to release and liberate. It provides the courage to fight our demons and to go in those dark recesses. It symbolizes the way in which the blind, rebellious, emotional nature has to be subdued by the soul as it seeks to impose its will upon that lower nature. To the soul, it represents the opportunity to transmute desire into spiritual aspiration. It gives to the personality the courage that it needs in order to do so, to be that spiritual warrior for the cause. It's the location of our personality attachments to emotions and the points where transformation of desire must occur. Its fiery nature can thwart or expedite the intentions of the soul itself. So is it fighting for you or is it fighting against you? Mars rules Aries and Scorpio. They both do battle, but they move differently. One works with the element of fire and the other with the element of water. Scorpio's way of fighting is not direct. It's subtle and powerful because it's contained by waters and it's concentrated. Aries' battlefield is himself. Aries rules beginnings and Scorpio rules death. So the personality must die in Scorpio in order that the soul can come into activity. The phoenix can rise. Mars in Aries, how I drive myself, how I use energy, how I move in the world. It's house placement. It's where you take initiative, where you assert yourself, and it dives into something new in the house where you'll find your Mars. The exoteric ruler is also Pluto. Ray 1, that's the arrow of death, the planet of will, the traditional astrology. Mars's relationship to Pluto, there's a similarity in what they do, especially in Scorpio. They both have arrows in their glyph. One is Ray 6 and the other Ray 1, intense and one-pointed for both of them. Pluto is a non-sacred planet. It's in the process of transformation, just like the Earth is and Mars is. It brings about wrenching, catharsis, death, elimination, and rebirth. It's an instrument for the development of spiritual will and destruction of personal will and selfishness. Not my will, but thine, O Lord. Right? It purges the lower self of all obstacles to soul infusion, and is therefore an agent of death and regeneration. But it's the death through transformation. It's the death of the not self, so the soul can come through. It's the death of worn out ideas and ideals of crystallized old forms, civilizations, they come and go cyclically, religious teachings, educational programs, they fail to educate and so they must go. Everything must progress, but in order for it to progress, it has to change. Death as the great releaser, which shatters the form and brings death to that which it embodies, the crystallized, the old that must go, the death of desire, the death of the personality, and all which holds man between the pairs of opposites in order to achieve that final liberation. To the soul, it represents an opportunity to eliminate limitations death never, ever, ever destroys the consciousness aspect. It just transforms the vehicle that the consciousness aspect uses for its field of expression. Mars and Pluto, power and initiative, and here's the glyphs for them. Another glyph for Pluto is just the upward arrow all on its own. So once Pluto has purged the lower subconscious residues that have been accumulated during many, many life cycles, it is instrumental in raising the material aspect of the personality so they can become totally available to the soul. That transformation. The first initiation, it drags to the surface and it destroys all that hinders in the lower regions. It's connected with the solar plexus, emotionally so difficult, found in the water signs. You can't get rid of this stuff if it's buried deep. It must be drugged to the surface to be dealt with. With the help of Pluto, one doesn't just stay on the surface of the mutable waters, but is asked to die, to transform, to bring closure to things that no longer serve. There's no need to carry that pain any longer. I die daily makes sense. One can feel overwhelmed, but use Pluto to go into the depths and come out regenerated. When there is Pluto stuff happening in the chart, it doesn't feel clear cut. It doesn't feel good either. I don't know how many of you were hit with that whammy of the Saturn-Pluto conjunction we just went through. But it's never easy. It's weighty, and you can't think your way out of your Pluto transit. It's a long process because Pluto moves relatively slow. It can hang out there off and on with the retrograde motion for a year and a half. Its orbit is the longest of all the planets because it's the furthest away from the sun. It's the darkest, and so it's been assigned rulership of the underworld, a place known for darkness and things that are not very clear. Things need to come up into the light of day to be understood. One of the things I like so much about modern science is, you know, we just had that that satellite that went to Pluto, and it sent us back those gorgeous images, including that image of a heart right smack there in the middle of Pluto. Who knew Pluto had a heart, right? But he does. You just have to uncover it. Pluto in the elements. And whatever element it's in, it's going to be transforming. It's going to be change. It's going to involve power of some kind. In fire, the fire signs, the need and power to transform our actions, our behavior, leading to trials, testing, and reorientation of our understanding of death and regeneration. In the earth signs, it's a driving desire to transform our accomplishments and the power to bring them into material expression. Pluto in air, it's the need and the power to change our relationships, resulting in duality being recognized and transformed. And Pluto in the water signs. Can't even speak today. Pluto in the water signs, the need and power to transform feelings and responsiveness, resulting in purification and identification of our base of power. The change in the rulership from Pluto to Mars, we want to see how that plays out within your chart. And you do that, as Eva said before, through the aspects between Pluto and Mars. They're going to relate to catharsis of some point. If they're conjunct, you could be bold, power-loving, and warlike. If they're harmonious, you know, sextile, trine, quintile, it could indicate you're assertive, commanding, and energetic. And if they're inharmonious, the crosses and quincunxes, then aspects could indicate you're aggressive, cutting, and uncompromising. The inharmonious aspects are the ones we learn from the most. That forces us to work out some uncomfortable dynamics. The harmonious ones, we tend to just sit back on our heels on those and, you know, take them for granted. Okay, we got a question here. Yeah. Karen asks, what are your thoughts and comments about the Saturn-Pluto conjunction and the coronavirus? Well, I'm here to tell you the timing is very suspicious on that, isn't it? I think that we can say there is a definite relation there. You know, Pluto transforms old things that need to be set aside, and disease is something that's built up by humanity for all, for, you know, for lifetimes, and humanity as a whole, not just one person. So yes, it's some kind of purging that has to take place. Whether it's a purging of the people who might die, or it's a purging of the way we look at the healthcare system in every single world in this country. Whether we look at the response, how one or two countries have responded extremely well, and other countries have not. You know, there's definitely transformation going on in, the world right now. It's pandemic, you know, that's huge. So, thanks for that question, Karen. I know I skirted around, the answer there, but yeah, there's definitely a relationship. Did you want to add something about that, Eva?
Okay. So when we think of Saturn, Saturn being the ruler of Capricorn, that deals with institutions, with our structures, with government. And what does Pluto do? Pluto wants to drag to the surface that which needs to be looked at. Well, if we look at nothing else except what has just recently happened in the United States, we see how inept the government has been in terms of handling this whole COVID-19 virus. We look at other institutions, whether it's the health institutions, and anything that needs to be transformed is now brought to the surface for us to deal with and to handle. Even within ourselves, you know, it forces us to have to look at ourselves. What do we need to do to change? We are being forced to change our everyday life, are we not? Nothing that worked 2 weeks ago can work anymore. So that whole forcing process, which is the combination of the two, because they're so powerful, these two planets, are forcing transformation and change. Maybe we will appreciate the freedom that this can eventually give us that right now we don't have. Just some thoughts.
Thank you. Okay, I think, let me see. Yeah. Back over to you, Eva.
It's worth mentioning with Pluto that it's generational. Because it's the furthest away from the sun and it takes the longest time to create its orbit, usually people that are born within a certain segment have all the same position of Pluto. So I, for example, have Pluto and Leo. It's generational. So a lot of people would have Pluto and Leo. The younger people obviously would have it in a different sign, whether it be a Virgo or Libra. It, again, generational. So that in itself is not how we would look at it in the chart. We would really want to understand where it is, what house it's in, and what kind of aspects are created. Aspects meaning relationships that are created between Pluto and another planet. And that's how we would try to understand it. So now that we've given you a little bit of information about these two signs, let's look at how they work together. Because our aim, as you know, is to try to find a relationship between the two signs, the axis that creates a balance. So what is out of balance? How are they similar? How are they different? And what do we need to do to balance the two so that we can actually stand in the middle? Now, in this particular slide, we see that we need to cultivate the mind to transform relationships. And if you look at the wording underneath, it's overcoming our lower natures to develop right speech, right thought, right action, and right human relations overall. Does any of this ring familiar? I hope so, because if you look up, you will see that all those refer to the Eightfold Noble Path that the Buddha offered us. And here we see on the right, the Buddha. Why is the Buddha so important? Because the Buddha was born, had his illumination, and died in the sign of Taurus. So Taurus is so often associated with the Buddha and with Waysak, because Waysak happens during it's usually in May, but during the time of Taurus. This is when the Buddha comes and for 8 minutes shines its light upon humanity with the Christ together and offers us greater illumination if we are receptive and open to it. So now let's move on, and we're going to see some more things about it. Taurus, you can see Taurus at the bottom here where the triangle comes to a point, and its opposite is Scorpio, and both of them are conveying the fourth ray. And another sign has been included here, and that's Sagittarius, even though it has nothing to do with the other two right now, but it does also convey the fourth ray. So you have a triangle of energies of the fourth ray. The other thing worth mentioning here is that both Taurus and Scorpio are found on the fixed cross. What does all that mean? Well, the fixed cross is where we as a humanity, especially a fairly evolved humanity, is now standing upon the fixed cross. This is where we have come out of aeons ago of being on the mutable cross and having to learn fundamental things of how a mind works, how emotions work, how the physical body and the form works. All of that was developed aeons ago. Now we as a humanity can be standing on this fixed cross where we have to then become the disciple, where we are tested, where we have to learn the basics of understanding of who we are and greater communication with the soul. And then later on, much, much later on, we can then move on to the cardinal cross. So this has nothing to do with where your sun is or where your most of your planets are on your chart. This has to do with an evolutionary process. I hope I haven't confused everybody with that thought, but we move on. So here's where the fun comes in. How do we see the differences between the two? So Taurus, as we have said, is the only sign in the whole zodiac that has the word illumination associated with it. So illumination in Taurus takes the place of the darkness of experiences in Scorpio. In Scorpio, the waters, as Biel has said, run very, very deep. And when the waters run deep and you look into the waters, can we see the bottom? No. And who knows what is lurking there in those deep waters? What is still you know, hanging in there in the deep waters that needs to come to the surface. This is where all our demons are. This is where all our glamours are, our illusions are, and our subconscious as well as unconscious things are stationed all within those deep waters. So that's the darkness of the experience. So in Taurus, it's the aspiration to the light of love, which is Venus, the light of love. And in Scorpio, we see that there is conflict with the duality, the fighter. This is the warrior within, constantly at battle with his own darkness, with his own demons, needs to find a place of dealing with all of that. It is the identification with desire. And as has been pointed out, it is so sensual. It loves everything that fulfills the individual, everything that is beautiful and sensual. And as we said, it could be food, it could be things, it could be a drink, it could be sex. It doesn't matter what it is. It's all identification with the desire nature. In Scorpio, it's relinquishing that desire nature. It's the total opposite. One repels, one attracts. Venus attracts, Mars pushes out and outward, and it repels it out. In Taurus, it's about attraction. It's about attachment. We become attached to what we love, let's face it. In Scorpio, we have to learn to repulse the very things that we are attached to. And you can only do that once you have seen them in the light of day. Once you as a soul can actually recognize and see all that stuff. In Taurus, it's about give me, give me, give me, acquisition. In Scorpio, it's about sacrificing those acquisitions, sacrificing all our attachments, letting go of them all. In Taurus, it's about the earthly material desires, while in Scorpio, it's the ability of the purification of those waters. And those waters tend to mean our desire nature, which is astral, which is emotional, as well as that which is hidden. It's peaceful, bucolic, which is pastoral, country life, rustic, tranquility, being out in the meadows, versus war and bloodshed. In Taurus, Taurus is the builder, whereas in Scorpio, it's more the destroyer. In Taurus, it's about the transmutation, while in Scorpio, it's about the transformation. In Taurus, it's about speech. Remember, it rules the throat, and the throat, we are told, is the center for the mental vehicle, which is the mind. And this is very, very much about how we use our words, our language, our speech, our writing, our creativity. And in Scorpio, it's about the silence, learning when to and when not to, because Scorpios have the ability to sting. Remember the scorpion? It can sting. It can do so much harm and damage. So learning when to be silent, when not to be using that biting voice is very important. In Taurus, this is the inertness. This is where the laziness can come in. The stolidity, the phlegmatism, the inertness, even unemotional, versus the passion and the intensity of Scorpio. Those who know Scorpios, there's my son is a double Scorpio. He has his sun in Scorpio. He has his rising sign or ascendant in Scorpio. And he's very, very intense. Both of them have to do with sex, although it's not in this particular combination. One rules the organs of the sex organs, which is Scorpio. It rules the sex organs, while in Taurus, it rules the organ of the creativity that comes from the throat. So one is creativity of the where we procreate, where we meet together, a man and a woman, and you create babies, you create passion and excitement. And the other one is where you create literature, speech, and so on. Both of them are very creative, but you can see how they govern different parts of the anatomy. One is the Taurus, the will to live in form, and the other is the will to die or leave the form, because it repels. It repels and pushes away. The Buddha is associated with Taurus, illumination through struggle, while Hercules is associated with strength through testing. BL said that according to the tests of Scorpio, there are 9 tests, and each level of our consciousness, whether it be the physical, the emotional, or the mental, each one of them has three different tests associated with those vehicles. So it definitely deals with the discipleship and the test that one has to go through on each level. Okay. One of the things that is not listed in that comparison there is value and money. In Taurus, Taurus being ruled by Venus, it has a lot to do with money and a lot to do with what we value, and value is money. So Taurus and the house of Taurus is associated with money. In Scorpio, it is the use of other people's money. And as I said, my son is a double Scorpio. And what does he do? He is a wealth manager, a finance manager. He works with other people's money. So.
Okay, we have two people ask the same question. What's the difference between transmutation and transformation?
Transmutation, we are told, is the change from one state to another through fire. It's never, never easy. Transformation, you change the form of it. Because it's got the word form in it, you change the form of what it is that you're doing. Does that help? Is there something you would like to add to that?
No.
Okay. All right.
Different method, but it's...
Exchange.
Right. They're both
one might changing. One might be a little different than the other, a little harder than the other. Scorpio, it's associated with all forms of letting go, as we mentioned before, while Taurus is associated with holding on and accumulation. One repudiates, pushes away, the other one gathers onto itself. As a matter of fact, there are many Taurians that love accumulating things. I remember going into someone's home before. My other vocation was as a real estate agent, and I would go into someone's home and I would see collections of all these different little crystal figurines, tons and tons of them. And of course, my question was, when were you born? It used to be a Taurus individual. Then another one had caps, like, you know, the hats, and the basement was full, two walls full of different caps. Again, this was a Taurus. Now, not all Taurians collect all that. It all depends on the individual. But I learned a long time ago that Taurians love things and they love to collect those things. Okay, so Taurus, Scorpio are also connected with desire, as we said. The misuse of this leads to trouble in a number of different ways. Overemphasis on sex. Usually, Scorpios are highly sexy, and they look sexy, and they have that magnetism associated with them. It's in their eyes, it's in their facial structure, and when we talk about animal magnetism, oftentimes we will, I'll bet anything there's a strong Scorpio in that person's chart. Overemphasis on sex, overbreeding, overeating. Overeating and overbreeding is associated with Taurus. The sex part is more associated with Scorpio. Materialistic grab for possessions, that's Taurus, manipulation of people and resources, which can lead to battles, that is Scorpio. I know that BL, you referred to your husband as being able to know what someone else is thinking of. I can say the same thing about my son. I used to think he would be a psychologist, a therapist, because he was so good at knowing what that individual needed in order to fix a particular problem. He could see what the problem was within the individual and come up with solutions. And I thought for sure he'll end up being a therapist. Now, maybe he uses a little therapy when he does his wealth management. Who knows? But I just interesting to see how other people with a lot of Scorpio end up using this energy that is there. The other thing about Scorpio that hasn't been mentioned anywhere is their dry wit. They're extremely witty. And I see that all the time with my son. Unbelievable the amount of wit and the sarcasm. Sarcasm is constantly there. I wonder if you found the same thing in your...
Oh, yeah. And sarcasm was definitely on the list I went through a minute ago. Yes, it's alive and present.
Yes. And secrets. We had a profile done for my son when he was much younger because we didn't have a clue what he would want to do. And one of the things that they said is that he would be very, very good as a therapist for prisoners because he could keep secrets. You know, how that ever came out on his profile, I don't know. But I found that very, very interesting. Okay, we move on. So look at the intensity and in the eyes. That is so cool that this shows us. And you see the little frown there between the eyes? You know, my son has that too, a little frown there between the eyes. The eyes can be so intense that people can feel like they're being, that the eyes are looking through them. That's how intense Scorpio can be. And they're very good with one-on-one relationships versus a group. The intensity is never good in a group because it gets dissipated. But on a one-to-one relationship, it can be quite intense and quite passionate. Now, the mind is very obvious with Taurus.
Yeah, it needs a couple of more minds, you know. Mind.
Yes. Okay, so exoterically, this is where there's deficient action. Why is Taurus related to the moon? It says here, related to Mother Nature and the moon, because it is the... I've drawn a blank, not the hierarchical ruler. It is the hierarchical, but it's also the opposite of fall. Exalted. The exalted. Oh, my mind went just blank. The exalted ruler of Taurus. And if you think of the Taurus glyph, you would see what we look at the horns, but it creates a half moon. And that moon can also be looked at as being able to be filled with things. So anyway, that's a very interesting look at the those horns that come out of the glyph, which is a half moon. So the moon is associated with Taurus and Mother Nature because it does work with the earth, the Mother Nature. Children who have poor relationship with their mothers often have psychological issues or character flaws as adults. In Scorpio, which is associated with dark behavior, it usually can rise out of a sense of deprivation. It can also be traced to psychologically to malnutrition. I guess this is out of people that have checked this out. The failure to develop a sense of values in Taurus can be inherited in the legacy we pass on in Scorpio. So values is very much a word that is a Taurian word, and legacy is a word that is associated with Scorpio because Scorpio has to do with inheritance. So we see the combination of these two and the word inheritance with Scorpio. The two work together in that respect.
Eva, yeah. I, I think one takeaway of this particular slide is that both Taurus and Scorpio hold that stuff within them. As we can see here, it's rooted in some of their childhood issues. So, but they hold that inside them and it festers. And so that's why it causes these psychological problems if it's not dealt with properly.
Correct. And I can, in Scorpio, it's very, very easy to see how it can be kept inside because Scorpios do keep things within. They're not ones to share. As a matter of fact, it's like pulling teeth to get Scorpios to share. It's where they hold all their secrets, all their inner thoughts and wishes within themselves. And Taurus, it's not as much with Taurus about holding it in, but we can see how it can also create psychological issues if there isn't a good relationship, as is said here, with their home life, with their mother. Let's move on.
I was trying. I was just using my wrong computer.
There we go. So compulsive obsessive disorders is usually associated with Scorpio on this chart and practical tips on the other chart or on the other side. Resolution. Taurus and Scorpio are both related to value and money. Whether it's in property, which is more of a Taurian thing, money is for both, and inheritance has to do with Scorpio. Both have to do with desire and death, particularly associated with Scorpio. The passion for giving and taking must be superseded by the concept of sharing and renewal. And the idea of hoarding and the idea of taking things in for the personal self has to be eventually lifted up and spiraled up to the idea of sharing and the renewal of the earth that we are starting to recognize more and more how we have to do that. That's a very Taurian thing. And many people that are Taurians have to do with ecology, with saving the earth and the renewal of our resources. According to the law of conservation of energy, nothing is ever really gained or lost. Birth and death are transitions from one condition to another. This is where you would have the idea of transform. This is where you would transform the consciousness from one condition to another condition. Because the true self, which is your consciousness, which is your soul, is never, never lost. As we all know, and this is just a repeat of what we know, the form dies, just like a tree. A tree loses its leaves every single winter, fall, winter. But the life that's in the tree still remains there so that a new set of leaves will grow again. It's no different with us. A new form will show up again, but the consciousness is remains in constant, continual consistency. You never lose what you've already gained. You may have forgotten it, but you don't lose it. It's still there in your consciousness. Sex divides us into genders and social groupings. Love draws them together again, since both of them are associated with sex. Okay. Do notice that we have here the tree of Eden and the apple and the snake. Why is that associated with Scorpio? Because that snake is wily. That snake is manipulative. That snake can bite. It can create death. And of course, in Buddhism, the elephant plays a big role as an icon. And it's, of course, we're referring to Buddhism because of Buddha. Okay. Relationship. Exoterically for ordinary humanity, it's the powerful focus of the lower desires which leads to death and defeat. and the triumph of the lower nature, which eventuates in the awakening to satiety and death. And we will see later on the keynotes for both of these, and you will see how these words that we have here all are then focused within their keynotes that we usually use in the full moon time, but it's worth contemplating and meditating on. Man becomes a prisoner of his own desire. Oh, for sure, right? That desire is our downfall. Our downfall is our desire nature. Just think about how that desire pulls at you to constantly fulfill that which it desires. And the reason we desire is because we're not fulfilled with the soul. When you are fulfilled with soul, that desire kind of wanes. It disappears. So man becomes a prisoner of his own desires. Esoterically, and this is for disciples and initiates, the final victory of the soul over the form being the personality. Death and darkness demonstrate as life and light as the result of this energy relationship. The dark night of the soul becomes the radiant sun. Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Okay, we've got another question here from Vicky regarding Scorpio. How do you relate Scorpio to the dweller on the threshold?
The dweller on the threshold is a big thing. The dweller on the threshold represents the entire personality. It represents everything that we are, that we've accumulated over lifetimes. Aside from the vices, the dweller is more than just the vices, because oftentimes it's referred to as all these vices, like the shadows within us. But the dweller is the full personality. And when that dweller meets the angel of the presence, so it becomes almost like a battle between the personality and the soul at the fourth initiation, and eventually the soul overcomes, so that all the identification with the personality that is the dweller is then relinquished. And it's apparently a very, very hard thing for those that go through it to accomplish that. It's very hard because for aeons, we've been identified with our personality. That's, you know, that there's so much attachment to that personality. What will I be if I let it all go? You know, and that is the dweller. So it's more than just our vices. So it's not just Scorpio that is associated with the dweller. The dweller is the entire personality, irrespective of whether you have Scorpio or not. That's all I'd like to say on that, unless you'd like to add more, BL.
No, I think you covered it. I mean, it is that final battle, but I think you covered it very well there. Thank you.
Okay, so how do they cooperate? They're both bipolar with many similarities. Some of them we've already talked about. Both are fixed signs, and they are considered at this stage of evolution the paramount signs of the fixed cross. I think that in the Bible, it does show the fixed cross as, I don't know the Bible stuff well enough to show you that there's a lion, there is a man with a water pitcher, which is the Aquarius opposite the lion, then you have the bull, and then you have the Scorpio. And this cross is represented, as I said, I think it's in the New Testament, and it's supposed to really show that we as a humanity are on this fixed cross. So these two signs are locked in a dynamic interaction. Both of them are of struggle. And as has been said, and we don't want to belabor it, but I am, it's the desire nature that is so, so powerful here. And that desire nature is always related to the astral or the emotional body. Both represent the great human drama of light versus dark, that duality. The desire for darkness, which is then change the desire or aspiration. See, desire, when you spiral up desire, it becomes aspiration. Desire by its very nature is not a bad, it's not a bad word. It's not bad. It's just understanding the pull that it has over us and then transforming desire into aspiration. Desire is a lower application of will. And here we're not referring to personal will, but we're referring to spiritual will. Both of these signs can be considered power signs. And power often relates to what has been accumulated under the impulse of desire. And they are financial signs as well. So we've talked about the finance part of it. One has to do with money and home, and the other has to do with other people's money. So here we see the great human drama of light versus dark.
Okay, I'm going to take over from the next slide, but first we have a question from Vicky. She wants to know, what is your understanding of Mars and short-term karma? And I'd like to answer that if you don't mind, Eva.
Sure.
Okay. I don't think of Mars associated with karma in the way I think that you're asking the question, Vicky. I think of several things associated with karma when I look at the chart. I think of Saturn, I think of the moon, I think of the moon nodes, but they just show the general patterns and stuff. You know, karma has to do with a lot of different things, and it has to do with us righting wrongs from the past, or I think a better way of putting it is learning the lesson properly, where we may have misused some power or energy in the past. We learn the proper way of doing it to balance the slate. Is Mars going to give us an opportunity to do that sometimes? Sure. You know, Mars is considered one of the malefics. So is Pluto, and in some ways so is Saturn. But I don't think of anything as being a malefic planet. I think of them all as being teaching planets. They teach us something different, and we have to transform their energy from the lower side of it to the higher side. That's what we're here for, is to learn, to experience, and to cycle everything up again. And part of that is taking care of the karma that we've built up over eons of doing things selfishly and wrongly. But it's all part and parcel of this great experience of life and rebirth and a new opportunity to correct the wrongs and to learn the proper way of doing it. I hope that answers your question. Did you want to add anything to that, Eva?
You answered it very, very well. I will just say that, like you, any planet is considered, can be considered our friend. It all depends on how we use it. Like Saturn, as you said, is malefic, and Saturn is our best friend, because it is our guide. It teaches us how to become disciplined and how to change. Mars also is our actions and our drives and our ambition. Same idea. So I think you answered that really well. Thank you.
Okay, moving on. All right, now we're going to talk a little bit about some points of cooperation. Taurus and Scorpio are they're the great drama of attachment and detachment. First, attachment to material values in Taurus, followed by detachment from material things in Scorpio. Also, attachment to spiritual values that are engineered by Scorpio, and finding fulfillment in Taurus. Together, they officiate at the reorientation of the desire nature, transforming the human into its divine state. The relationship of the will to desire is also worked out here. Vulcan representing spiritual will and Mars representing desire of form. In this respect, Taurus represents the spiritual and Scorpio represents the forces of desire. They're both signs of intense sexuality and they're associated with the sacral and the throat centers. The sacral is related to build and destroy. Building also occurs at the throat center on a higher level, and destruction can occur through the word. The fourth ray is distributed through both signs, as we've seen before, and it relates these two signs to our solar system, which is of the fourth order. There's always going to be analogies that we can find when we look closely at this. Additionally, the first ray comes to Taurus through Vulcan and to Scorpio through Pluto. Both of these are signs of profound warfare as seen through their individual keynotes. Taurus, the exoteric keynote, lets struggle be undismayed. And Scorpio's esoteric keynote, warrior am I, and from the battlefield I emerge triumphant. In the early days, the combined forces of Taurus and Scorpio represent extreme Maya and illusion, the Maya of material, earthly plane, and the glamour and illusion of the astral plane. Both of these...
Excuse me, I just wonder if you could talk a little bit more about what Maya means for those that may not know that. It's the first time we're using this word in this presentation.
Okay. Maya is related to the physical plane. Maya is actually, it can encompass all three of them, but specifically Maya relates more to the physical plane. It's the attachment to that not real, to the physical. And then glamour is associated more with the astral. That's what we convince ourselves is true based on our desires. And then illusion is Maya on the mental plane. It's our ability to think things are different than what we actually see them to be. So does that help everybody? It's a, what's the term that I want? It's like a fog that hides the truth from us. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. Okay, so both of these signs are associated with the Buddhic plane. Taurus is that clear seeing, that single eye, which brings the unitive vision of the Buddhic plane, and Scorpio with the light of the intuition, which resolves all dualities and ends the power of the serpent of illusion. So the Buddhic plane is reflected down on the astral plane, but as long as we have issues with glamour and with rampant desires and stuff like that, it's not a calm reflective surface. It's not a valid reflection.
It's also worth mentioning that the Buddhic plane is a very high level of attainment. It is where all forms are resolved, and it is pure love, pure knowing instantaneously, and it's requires a very high level of achievement in order to experience that Buddhic plane.
Right, right. The fourth initiation is where you're working on the Buddhic plane. But these are two signs that will bring us there eventually when we finish the work that we need to do. Okay, another question. Would it be possible for one of you to do my... I'll email you, Sarah, about that. We got a lot going on right now, but I'll email you about your question, Sarah. Okay. So we've talked a lot today. I want to wrap it up here in the next couple of slides. So Taurus is all about desire for the average man. It is will or directed purpose for the disciple. Scorpio is conflict. It's that test. It's that trial. It's eventually going to be triumph. It's guaranteed that we're going to have the triumph. What's not guaranteed is how long it's going to take us to make it through those tests and trials. It brings us from one crisis to another, and those usually end up being important moments of reorientation for us. We learn the most from this struggle, from these tests, not from the easy life. It is both the turning point for the individual as well as humanity for a whole. Taurus's desire for aspiration and growth of the soul light and its polar opposite Scorpio is about the conflict of duality and desire overcome. The axis that eventually needs to be balanced and recognized, it's the same line. It's got a joint purpose. It's one of learning to use the wisdom of the light of the soul to overcome desire through right thought, right action, right relationships. This gets back to what the Buddha told us, right? Those eight noble truths, they all begin with right. Okay, here's a quote. The darkness of the experience in Scorpio becomes illumination in Taurus. For it must never be forgotten that where the pairs of opposites are concerned, they gain and profit from each other. There is a direct line of force and of contact between the two. This is a fact which is seldom recognized. This is from Esoteric Astrology, and this is one of the main reasons we decided to present this webinar in this particular way, because it is seldom recognized that these are one and the same with a shared purpose. Okay, so I wanted to bring up again, we talked about the full moon work, and we saw earlier how important that full moon work is at this time of alignment. It's a very special alignment. You know, we sit as we meditate, and we're working on our alignment, aren't we? Well, that's exactly what is happening at the full moon. It's the alignment between the sun and the moon and the earth, isn't it? This, DK tells us, is a very important time for humanity to tap into the particular energies of this sun-moon axis. He also tells us it's a way to approach the planetary hierarchy in a manner that is not available at other times. Okay? We also know that the nature of the soul is light. And DK tells us the entire theme of the zodiac can be approached from the angle of light and its unfolding and increasing radiance and the gradual development of that inner light. So every time you have a Taurus-Scorpio polarity within your chart, whether it's your sun-earth axis, your ascendant axis, your midheaven, nadir, a planetary opposition, even a planet with an empty spot from it that something is going to transit regularly. Keep in mind what's important about Scorpio and Taurus and what the lights are from them. Taurus, it's the penetrating light of the path. It's a beam of light streaming forth from the point in Aries and revealing the area of light control. Scorpio is the light of day. This is the place where three lights meet, the light of the form, the light of the soul, and the light of life. They meet, they blend, they rise. And then...
I just want to mention here also, it's worth knowing, and I'm sure a lot of our audience already knows this, that when we say that the moon is in Taurus, the moon is actually not in Taurus. The moon is actually in, that the sun is actually in Taurus, and the moon is in its opposite sign. That is the axis. So when we say the moon is in Taurus, it's not in Taurus. The moon is actually in the opposite sign. So here, you can actually address this right here. This is perfect.
Right. It's a, basically, it's a solar fire full moon observation or observance that we're working with when we talk about the full moon. Okay. And, you know, we showed you Eva's chart for her Aries Libra polarity last week. And so I thought it would be good to look at the Wessex full moon chart today. Now, this particular full moon, this particular solar fire full moon, is coming up on the 7th of May. What we see here is that the sun is at 17 Taurus, right here. And with it, his little good buddy, Mercury, conjunct. And they're actually, both of them are making a trine, that's what this is right here, to Pluto. Trines, what do we say? They were favorable aspects. And Pluto is what? It's one of the rulers of Scorpio. So it's here to help with this combined energy work of transforming past patterns of the moon. Okay? Opposite the sun is the moon and the earth right over here together at 17 Scorpio. And what are they doing? They're making a trine to Neptune in Pisces, right? Right over here. So again, it's the little helper here, and Neptune is one of the rulers of Cancer, the sign of the moon. You know, so there's relationships that are being forged here. Also, Neptune can veil this, I'm sorry, the sun can veil Neptune. So it's almost like we've got a little mutual reception going on here where Pluto is in a good relationship, a trine relationship to the sun, and it's the ruler of the moon, and Neptune is in a good relationship with the moon, and it can be considered to be unveiled from the sun here. Also, whenever you have a trine, you also, it, with an axis, you also have sextiles, which means there's a favorable, it's a sextile from here to here, and it's a sextile from here to here. So everybody's talking to everybody. There's relationships established, and they're good relationships, which means they have a common purpose. They're there to help each other with the work that's being done here. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you also have the ruler of each of those in trine to each other. So the ruler of Taurus, being Venus, is trine to the ruler of Scorpio, being Mars.
Right. Up there. Yeah. Right. So there's all kinds of activity. It doesn't look like it here because I've limited the things that I've got here in the chart. But there's all kinds of interaction going on here at this time, this important time. This is also such a wonderful festival. It's one of the three key festivals each year, and it's the festival of the Buddha. So there's this synergy between this Taurus-Scorpio axis with the work of Pluto and Neptune and Venus and Mars, all going on here for the theme of this Taurus solar fire full moon in the Wessex festival, which is illumination and the Buddha festival. So I just wanted to show you how this works in action. In a chart, we can sit up here and talk to you till we're all blue in the face, but I think it helps to see the practical thing here.
And what's missing here is, see, there is a T-square here. And well, in terms of signs, there, what is missing here is the Leo energy. See, you don't have anything Leo creating the opposite axis between the other arm of the fixed cross. That's all. So whoever has this would be lacking the fourth leg of the table or the chair.
Well, the thing with this is a full moon event, which means these are transiting planets. Right. So then what you want to do is you want to see how this overlays on your own chart. You may have that missing Leo. I know I do. I have the missing Leo planets here, and I don't have these puppies here. So this would overlay very nicely against the things that I have in my chart, and it would fill out all the areas that I'm deficient in on a normal basis. So anyway.
Now, we're running a little late, but if anybody wants to ask a question, this is a good time before we say goodbye.
Okay, I don't see any hands, and I don't see any new questions. And Sarah, I will email you about your question. All right, so thank you, everybody, for participating. We hope to see you next month when we're up for the Gemini-Sagittarius axis. And that will be on the 11th of April.
And as always, this is posted so people can have access to the slides as well as the recording on. Where is it posted?
Makara. And I'll be sending out the announcements once I get it all processed and everything. Sometimes it takes 5 minutes for it to process, and sometimes it takes 2 hours. It just depends. But later today, sometime, hopefully I'll have it posted and send the announcement out that it's there for you. Okay. So goodbye, everybody. Thank you. Thank you,
Bye. Thank you, so much.
Thank you, Michael, on our staff.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Goodbye, everyone. Blessings.
Yes. Thank you, Michael.